I'm sorry for the interruption of your usual viewing. And please don't try to change channels.
This is Rush to Reason. Ta-da! With John Rush.
There's only one man who would dare give me the raspberry.
Well, we have something to aspire to then.
And Dan Muir.
I don't know what it is, but it's phenomenal.
Discussing the issues that matter to you.
Don't give yourselves to brutes. Men who despise you, enslave you, tell you what to do, what to think, or what to feel. Don't give yourselves to these unnatural men.
Finding real answers, using logic and reason.
The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I get it. I swear I've seen a lot of stuff in my life. But that was awesome.
Let's do this.
Now, here is your host of Rush to Reason, John Rush.
All right, Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. Ta-da! Damn.
Ta-da!
It's the second Tuesday of the year.
Second Tuesday. Are we going to count every Tuesday through the end of the
year?
We
might.
That'd be kind of funny, wouldn't it?
The 52nd Tuesday of the year.
Wow. That would be like
the
last
one. We'll count them. We'll roll them in. Like maybe we will. John Rush, Dan Muir, Cassie George doing Facebook Live. She's going to bolt here in just a minute. But before she does that, we have a special guest joining us that I think this fits into Cassie's life very well at the moment. Jay is joining us from Professional Credit Restoration. Now, Jay, just a little forewarning here. Cassie accidentally left her car unlocked on Sunday night, and somebody broke in and stole her wallet. So what advice do you have for Miss Cassie?
Well, a lot of advice. The first thing she needs to do is to notify the credit bureaus that her identification was stolen.
Okay.
And then put a lock on the account so that if anybody tries to use her identification to get credit, open accounts, etc., that file will be locked and no information will be given out to any creditor unless the party involved okays it.
Okay. Another question that we have for you, and I know I'm going to get into the Social Security aspect of this in a moment, but what if in her particular case her car registration was also stolen? Is there ways for anybody to take that piece of identification and do anything with it?
No, other than some type of identification, but she's going to, by the way, the best thing to do is on your credit cards, where your signature, where you can put your signature, just put there, ask for identification.
Ask for ID. Yep. Good point.
And that way, that'll protect credit cards from being used because nobody checks the signatures.
No.
And so it's an easy way to
do it. Yeah, I never signed mine.
Check ID. Some of them I've written check ID. Others I just leave blank. And they're technically, if it's blank, supposed to check for ID, but they rarely do, Jay.
Yeah. It's and also, the state of Colorado has an identity theft kit that you can get free.
Okay.
Just by at the Attorney General's office. And it tells you really, really what to do and the forms to fill out and the police report that has to be filed, et cetera.
Okay. Okay.
And it's a good idea for somebody that had that run into that just to get a hold of the Attorney General's office and ask for that kit.
So given all that Cassie just went through, one of the reasons why, and I know you sent a little information ahead of time, which I read through, you do not want to keep your Social Security card anywhere where that could actually happen, like, in other words, your wallet, where your wallet's stolen, now your card is out, right?
That's correct. I mean, a lot of times, you know, you'll put it in your wallet somewhere, and these thieves are pretty smart, and they look through the wallets, and they look through the cars if they break into a car in the glove compartment, and that's where people usually just put things that they want to refer to.
Right.
And it's just a good idea not to carry any of that. Make a copy of your report if you want to have some identification.
Got it.
But the card itself, I would keep under lock and key.
Okay. Got it. Makes sense. Makes sense. Okay. Also, in this article that you gave me, or some of the information you gave me, talking about the last four digits of your card. Talk about that for a moment. Of your number, I should say, of your card number.
Yeah, the card number, the first five digits on the card number are identify where your age and where you got the card, the location. The last four digits are randomly chosen. So if you, there's numbers that follow you around most of your life. One is your Social Security number. The other one happens to be your credit score number. Mm-hmm. So these things haunt you if you don't take care of them. And so to use that number as a password, for example, is a big mistake.
A bad idea.
So you just have to be careful with any form of identification that a thief can use to open accounts in your name, get loans in your name, just use it, you know, health wise to take advantage of your Social Security benefits, those kinds of things.
Got it. Makes sense. All right, Jay, how can folks get a hold of you guys at Professional Credit Restoration?
They can reach us at 303. What is that number?
232.
Yeah, 232-0303.
There you go. Yep, 303-232-0303. Also, guys, find them on the web at prcweb.us. Jay, I appreciate your time today. Your ad's coming up next. We appreciate all that you're doing, and let's keep people safe out there. And any other tips you've got, please send them our way.
And have a safe week.
Thank you, Jay. Thanks, Jay. Appreciate it very much. So, yeah, Professional Credit Restoration, 303-232-0303. Call them today. Tell them Rush to Reason sent you.
Your credit profile should not stop you from reaching your goals. Professional Credit Restoration carefully analyzes your credit history, searching for errors that may be lowering your credit score unnecessarily. Once they work to correct those errors, Professional Credit Restoration coaches you through the simple steps you can take to improve your credit for the future. On average, Professional Credit Restoration will help you reach your goals within 6 months. Call Professional Credit Restoration today at 303-232-0303.
Front Range Mortgage, if you're a veteran without a VA loan, you're missing the boat. You can have a lot of benefits, including low money down, lower interest rates, all sorts of benefits that you get that, frankly, Dan and I, Charlie, Cassie, we do not get because we are not vets, right?
That is correct.
So 303-500-1900 is Front Range Mortgage's phone number. Call Brian today. When you do, tell him Rush to Reason sent you.
If you are a Colorado veteran and you are not in a VA mortgage, you've probably been lied to. If you're a veteran and not in a VA mortgage, 99% guaranteed, you're paying too high a rate, throwing away thousands of dollars a year to a bank that will never tell you they're taking you for a ride. As a vet, you're entitled to use a VA loan over and over again. You should be paying zero in mortgage insurance, and you can take out 100% of the value of your home for paying off credit cards. Your bank is never going to tell you how much you're throwing away, but I will. I'm Brian Murphy, owner of Front Range Mortgage, a local Colorado-only mortgage team that has helped hundreds of veterans to drop their mortgage insurance, save thousands, lowering their payments, and pay off high-interest credit cards. Call me and my local team for a painless 5-minute conversation to see how much we can save you. Our number, 303-500-1900. That's 303-500-1900, or visit frontrangemortgage.com. NMLS 378844, regulated by the Division of Real Estate.
No liberal media bias here. This is Rush to Reason.
All right. Rush to Reason. Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. I got my feet going to that.
Okay, so I've never signed the back of my credit card.
Me neither.
Ever. You know what? I've had people say, well, we can't think it's not signed. I said, fine, don't, you won't get paid then. I just lay it like
I've
that.
I've never seen him. I mean,
I've had it happen once.
I've never seen... I'm trying to think back to how many people actually asked me for ID with my, mine aren't signed either.
So, and I don't have CID on the back of my, I just don't, nothing.
Maybe I should start doing that. I don't think the man, most of them don't look anyway.
I was going to say, I've had one person say that, and I said, well, fine, then just don't get paid.
That's a good point.
You know, so they took the card. Amazingly, they took the card.
Typing away here.
I know you are. That's why I'm sitting here watching. I'm watching.
And I can't talk and type at the same time. I hate that. I just can't do it. It's in my brain. I just cannot type and talk at the same time. I'm trying because I take notes and do different things over in show. So,
but why? Okay, so let's say something. Lose your wallet or whatever. Why would you want your signature on everything?
I wouldn't.
You would want it on anything.
No,
nothing. Zip, zip.
CID's
because
not
that's
bad.
Because that's the best. That's the best way to refute it.
Yeah.
Well, let me see the signature. Well, that's not mine.
Right.
Because you can copy the signature if you look at it at the back of a card. Pretty simple.
Not that complicated.
No, especially nowadays, electronic signatures are so sloppy.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody's going to know the difference anyways. All right, let's do this. We'll shift gears here for a minute. Jim Phillips joining us from Heritage Foundation. Jim, welcome to Rush to Reason. How are you, sir?
Oh, pretty good. How's it going?
We're doing very well. Thanks for joining us today. So talk to us about what's going on over in Iran.
Well, as you know, there's been for the last 10 days, roughly, there's been a series of protests that initially started for economic reasons. There was a huge increase in the price of eggs, but those quickly mushroomed into much more broader and more cutting critiques of the regime, including calls for the overthrow of the Islamist dictatorship and chants of we not for Gaza, not for Syria, we sacrifice ourselves for Iran, which was a, you know, critique of the adventurous foreign policy interventions that the regime has staged in Syria and Iraq and Yemen. So the regime is on its heels, although it does seem like the protests have peaked.
Got it. Have they made any progress through all of that? What's actually happening to those that are protesting?
Well, there's been more than 21 people killed in the protest and more than 3,000 arrested. And it's important to note that the leaders of the last major protests back in 2009 are still in jail. So I think many of these people will not see the light of day anytime soon, unfortunately.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't think we can grasp what they're really going through over there. I mean, you're like you say, they're in jail. They're probably in jail for life, and they really are risking everything to try to make a change.
That's right. And once they're in jail, they're tortured, they're raped. Some die in custody under mysterious circumstances. Some are never seen again. So it really takes a lot of courage to stand up and protest against this regime. And what's really significant, I think, about this round of protests is that it's not so much the middle class and rich college students that are out challenging the regime as it was back in 2009. Now the protests are concentrated in areas of the country that historically were pillars of support for the regime. And many of the protesters are not middle class and upper class Iranians, but working class and rural poor that were the kind of bedrock of support for the regime in the past. So it's very dangerous for the regime that these types of people that they formerly could take for granted for their support now have turned against the regime.
Now, President Hussein has said today, too, that this is more than just, or I shouldn't say more, there's more to it than just the economy, but he also sees this as a lot of generational problems they're having. Am I saying that correctly?
Yes. I think the president is kind of triangulating, and he's in a power struggle with the ultra-hardliners surrounding the supreme leader. And the president, he's called a moderate in the West, but I see him as a hardliner himself. He may be more pragmatic, but he's worked hand in glove with the supreme leader for many decades. They have tactical differences, but they operate very well together. But he is trying to score political points against the Revolutionary Guards. And part of the reason that there were protests was the government released a budget that called on more fees for everyday Iranians and also released very high figures of spending on the Revolutionary Guards, which caught the eyes of many Iranians.
Interesting. So they feel like they're spending more on defense than they should be, essentially?
Yeah, they feel like the regime in Tehran is pouring billions of dollars into Syria and Lebanon and Iraq, and there's also a lot of corruption in which regime insiders siphon off a lot of the oil money that Iran has accumulated. And that has led to very high rates of dissatisfaction among, you know, very regular, everyday Iranians.
Does the, you know, looking back in history, and I know at one point in time you see different stories, different news articles and so on, where Iran, and Dan, you're more of a historian than I am, but Iran, say 50 years ago, did not look like it does today, because today we've got the influence of the Islamic culture and all of what's going on when it comes to Islam that has really changed Iran from what it was 50 years ago. Is that correct in saying?
Very much so.
Yeah, I think it's a definite political culture, and up until recently, the regime could count on the support of many Iranians who actually may have had their economic status improved after the 1979 revolution. But the young people today and the protesters are mostly under the age of 30. They don't remember pre-revolutionary times, and they're just dissatisfied increasingly not only with the economic situation, but with the lack of freedom in Iran.
Yeah, because pre-1979, I mean, Iran was a very, for lack of a better term, secular country, very Western.
People wore whatever they wanted to wear, beautiful dresses, things like that.
The Islamic law was not in enforce at all.
Got it.
And that's what caused the Islamic Revolution, you know, back in 79, Iran hostage situation the whole bit.
Yeah, that's right. And although the Shah was a dictator, he wasn't a totalitarian dictator as this regime is today. He was an authoritarian. But as long as you didn't criticize the regime, you had a lot of social, political, and economic freedom. You could wear the clothes you wanted. You know, you didn't have the same restrictions on the mixing of sexes that young people are fed up with in Iran today, or women being told that their hair is showing and, you know, they could be fined or even put in jail for that. And to a lot of Iranians, you know, the government should have more important things to do than check the dress of, you know, everyday Iranians.
Yeah, very, very good point. Jim Phillips again from the Heritage Foundation. Jim, how can folks find out more about, you know, your work, the Heritage Foundation, everything you guys have going on there?
Well, they could check out our website at heritage.org and look on the Middle East section, and there's a bunch of different articles about Iran.
Great. Great. Jim, thank you very much. We appreciate your time today. Have a fantastic week and a great 2018.
Okay, thank you.
You're very welcome. We'll have you back in the future. Good stuff. Yeah,
that was really good stuff.
You know more about the history of that than I do, Dan, but it looks to me like part of what they're going through right now, which I think Jim would agree, is in a lot of ways people not liking Islamic rule.
Oh, that is correct. You know, this happened under the Obama administration, too. They tried a little revolution, and, of course, we didn't support them at all. And so I'm curious to see what the Trump administration will do in supporting this. Now, verbally through Twitter and whatnot, he's been supporting the uprising, but we'll see what happens.
Okay. We'll find out more. Bristol Cone Shooting is coming up next. Great shooting range. Not just a shooting range, though. Great gun store shooting range, gunsmithing. They'll supply your ammo, all of your ancillary items, you name it. If you want to go shooting and enjoy it, learn. They've got classes. Ladies, it's Tuesday night. Ladies'
Tuesday
night is tonight. Free lanes for you ladies. Head on out. Do some shooting. Again, bristleconeshooting.com. And while you're out there, join. Become a member. That gives you a lot of different things that you don't get otherwise. Free access to the little hosting area. And you get a free Wi-Fi passcode. And you can make lane reservations ahead of time.
Yep, half price on gun rentals.
Half price. Lots of good things.
Lots of good things.
Make sure you become a member while you're out there as well. 303-985-0989. Bristol Cone Shooting. Call them now and tell them Rush to Reason sent you.
When Jacqueline and Brian Clark opened Bristol Cone Shooting in 2015, they intentionally created an inviting atmosphere where all levels of shooters would feel comfortable. Jacqueline knew from experience that gun shops tended to be boys' clubs, and she wanted to offer women the chance to take classes, develop their shooting skills, and enjoy the sport of shooting. In order to provide a facility where beginners would feel at ease, Jacqueline and Brian invested in a state-of-the-art HVAC system that recycles the air every 90 seconds so you never smell the gunpowder. You won't feel out of place or intimidated because Jacqueline and Brian hire all of their own instructors and they personally train their retail employees to greet you warmly when you come in the door. Visit Bristle Cone Shooting on West Cedar Drive in Lakewood and see for yourself that this isn't your grandfather's shooting range. John Rush remains confident that you will feel welcome at Bristle Cone Shooting.
All right, U.S. Gold Coin is up next. In fact, Andy Goss is going to be joining us tomorrow, as he does once a month. We'll learn more of some of the insider tricks and tips and things that are going to happen potentially in 2018 and how you can stave off inflation and help out your own portfolio. Most of all, you can do that by calling 1-800-468-2646 or go to the website usgoldcoins.com. That's usgoldcoins.com. While you're there, please tell them Rush to Reason sent you.
Andy Goss from U.S. Gold Coins wants you to think about collecting gold and silver coins as wealth insurance. You have car insurance just in case you're in an accident, and health insurance just in case you get sick. It makes sense to have wealth insurance just in case something happens and you can't access your money from the banks. That's why, as a KLZ listener, Andy is offering to give you his CD, How to Protect Your Wealth, for free. All you have to do is call 800-468-2646 and mention KLZ. This CD teaches you everything you need to know about how to use gold and silver coins to protect your wealth in any situation and introduce you to the fun and lucrative world of collecting valuable coins. This offer also includes a free copy of The Guide to U.S. Coins, basically the Bible for coin collectors. Start on your way to a secure future with wealth insurance in the form of beautiful, authentic, and very valuable U.S. coins by calling Andy Goss at 800-468-2646. That's 800-468-2646 today.
Stay up to date with Rush to Reason after the show on Twitter at Rush to Reason and on Facebook.com/Rush to Reason.
All right, Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560, John Rush, Dan Buehr, Charlie Grimes, our engineer, and up next, Dan, I had several people send me this article, by the way, so I had to talk about it because, like, four people sent this to me. Four people I really like, by the way.
Well, it kind of sounds, just real quick, kind of sounds like the Ayatollah's running this HOA.
The dumbest HOA ever is allegedly forcing residents to keep its garage doors open for up to 8 hours a day. In this week's display of homeowners association idiocy, the Auburn Greens complex in Auburn, California, is allegedly requiring all of its residents to keep their garage doors open during the week, all because one resident, had people sleeping in their garage. Sacramento-based news channel KCRA3 reports of all possible solutions to this problem, this HOA appears to have found the very dumbest.
Well, first of all, who cares if somebody's sleeping in their garage, in your neighbor's garage? Do you care?
Not really.
No, do you really care?
I mean, as long as there's not a bunch of transients running around, I guess. I mean, I don't live in an HOA, so I don't know if I can answer that. I'm not a good one to answer that.
Well, I mean, okay.
If I lived in one, or when I did live in one.
So if you've rented any property, far as residential property, multi-unit type buildings or whatever, which Carla and I managed for a few years in Minnesota, you'll know that a lot of the people that are coming up illegally have a lot of people living in their dwellings. Way more than they're supposed to.
Okay. Oh, you mean more than the allotted, like, four or five or six or whatever?
I mean, you're talking about 15. I mean, they have a lot of people living in these dwellings. Now, with California being the sanctuary state it is, how in the world can this HOA discriminate against those families for having more people into the dwelling than is allowed?
Well, the insanity comes to you from Placer County, California. I think I'm saying that right, where a HOA apparently posted notices on residents' doors telling them of their requirements to keep the garage doors open from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday, or to face an immediate hearing notice and be subjected to a $200 fine. So you keep the door open, which then would make more people able to enter into your garage and the things that are inside of your garage, and you're to leave that open for 8 hours.
Yeah, but then the HOA Nazis, as they're driving around, will be able to see that there's nobody sleeping in your garage from 8 in the morning to 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
What happens at 4:30?
Well, that's when most people sleep, you know. That's when, if people are going to sleep in your garage, they're going to do it in the morning. They're not going to be out, you know, being productive somewhere else. They're going to be sleeping there in the morning. Because when you close the garage door at night, nobody would ever sleep there at night.
KCRA spoke with the HOA board member who told them that the policy came into being after the neighborhood managers learned that people were actually living in one resident's garage. So why don't you just deal with the one resident? Why do you have to punish everyone else? Because that's how dumb HOAs are.
Because it's collectivism.
Okay.
Well, that's the answer right there. I mean, if one's doing it, then the rest of them must be doing it. Or if one is doing it, we can't single out that neighbor because that would be unfair and unkind.
Even though he's the one, he or she is the one with everybody sleeping in the garage.
Right. Because then the neighbors may retaliate to that one because then they all know it's that one with the garage door open all the time.
In perhaps the most obvious statement ever recorded in an interview, one of the homeowners living in Auburn Greens named Fred Waldlow told the news site that this is an issue that they should address differently. I feel if we have to have this open from 8 in the morning till 4 in the afternoon, anybody can help themselves and steal you blind as they do in the Auburn Greens complex. Should we? I've got a little video here. Should we play this?
Yeah, play the video.
I haven't prefaced this.
And you know, John, there is no good excuse.
But I'm guessing since it's on regular TV, we probably don't have to worry about the dump button. I'm pretty sure we're going to be safe.
This is a terrible rule.
This is the dumbest HOA thing I've ever heard. So let me play this. Here we go. Let me see if this will... We might have an ad real quick. Let's make sure we don't. Oh, here we go. Oh, Charlie, we ready? Maybe I'm not. Oh. Sometimes YouTube, when it's embedded, doesn't want to play all the time. So let me load up the actual YouTube video, and then I've got a little mattress ad I have to watch first. So give me one second.
Is it making you sleepy?
No, but we could put the mattress in the garage, Charlie just
said.
Yeah,
you could. Yeah, good idea, Charlie.
Okay.
No, this is dumb.
Okay, let's get that. Okay, now, Charlie, can you hear me now, Charlie? No? Still no? Well, crap. Dan?
I don't know.
I'm going to see if I'll just play on the laptop regular.
He can hear that.
Well.
Can you hear that? Can you hear that?
Yeah, I don't have any sound.
Can you hear me now?
No. So keep talking. I'll get it figured out here. So what do you? First of all, we talked about this a little bit ago. I think you and Andy talked about HOAs?
Here, I've got it. If you want.
You got it here. You plug in. Go ahead. I'll try to get mine fixed while you're doing yours. I'll let you play this. There you go. Perfect.
Okay. Here we go, Charlie.
Are you ready?
Auburn Greens resident Fred Waitlow cleans out his garage.
And I got to remove all this stuff, this is personal belongings, pictures.
But it's not something he wants to do.
If we have to have this open from 8 in the morning till 4 in the afternoon, anybody can help themselves and steal you blind, and they do it in this Auburn Greens complex.
The mandate from the Homeowners Association says residents must keep their garage doors open from 8 to 4 Monday through Friday. Failure to comply can result in a $200 fine.
This is not safe.
Shally Ia keeps her garage door closed, fearing what might happen if it's left open all day.
This will just be an open door policy and saying, welcome, take what you want.
A member of the board who did not want to speak on camera said the policy was enacted because of a resident who was allowing people to sleep in his or her garage.
I think they could have gone around this in a better logical way, like, for example, maybe a monthly inspection.
The on-site manager closed its window and posted this sign as we pulled into the parking lot and didn't return our phone call. The corporate office had no comment and referred us to the district manager in Auburn, who has yet to return our email and phone call.
That's an issue that they should address differently, I feel.
Until it is, Shally and others plan to keep their garage doors closed.
Yeah, I think I would be. So if they came through your HOA that you happen to be living in, Dan, and said something along those lines, what would you do?
I'd say no way.
I'd say pound sand. That's unbelievable.
Is that in my original document? Is that in my original agreement? That's where I would start. And then they would get Kevin Flesh would be contacting them if they harassed me at all.
Yeah, I look. Go ahead, Charlie. Oh, I can't hear you. Still can't hear you. Oh, sorry.
He's not talking to us.
Well, fine.
I mean, I suppose there's something.
Talk
more
to somebody else.
There's something
then.
More important.
Yeah, exactly.
Going on
than us. Jeez.
Good grief. So.
Anyways.
You know, okay. Fine. Fine. Be that way, Charlie. But no, I mean, wouldn't you? First of all, I tell them there's no way. And if they harassed me, if they tried imposing this $200 fine, well, Kevin Flesh would be
contacted. I wouldn't want to leave my garage. I don't care whether I've got, you know me, I'm pretty clean garage anyways, but I don't want to leave that open all day long. Why would you want to leave your garage open all day?
Why would you have to? So if somebody is caught sleeping in your living room that's not supposed to be there, now do you have to leave the front doors open?
Oh, that's a good
Where
point.
Does it end?
Good point. So what would this HOA do otherwise? Because frankly, it's none of their business who's living there, as far as I'm concerned, unless there's some rule against it.
Well, that you got to look at your original contract. What are the rules?
What do the HOA rules say?
Correct.
As far as how many people can live on the property.
Correct.
Permanently.
And then, right, and then you go from there.
There's probably some temporary thing as well. That, well, yeah, and are they, Charlie said, are they selling access to your, in other words, are they renting the garage?
Well, it's 99% chances, just extended family, people that they know, coming up from down south, having a place to live.
No offense. If I had extended family, let's just say that they wouldn't be living in the garage.
You guys are looking at me like I'm crazy. I managed properties.
No, I know you're right.
In rural Minnesota, where they were putting two-bedroom apartments, 15 people were living in them.
Jeez.
And by the time we could get them evicted, they hadn't paid their rent. They were all on welfare. And they would just move on to the next place. It took us 90 days to get rid of them.
So they just live free 90 days.
Yeah, live free for 90 days. At a time.
Enrolled.
And they're driving their Escalades, and they're, you know, paying everything with food stamps, and they're not paying their rent. And the state of Minnesota...
that's my ride, Dan. Come on.
And the state of Minnesota bought all their furniture and all that kind of stuff.
Well, that's my crib, Dan.
It was so bad in 90 days, I had to rip out all the carpet.
Jeez.
Everything was trash. This was all brand new stuff. Everything was trashed in 90 days.
Jeez.
I mean, I understand why the HOA doesn't like this, but
well,
this is
I agree,
dumb,
but they're going
this is
about
a dumb
the
way
wrong
to go
way.
About it. Totally
yeah,
dumb.
Totally the wrong way.
Yeah.
First of all, there's probably a city ordinance against people living in the garage.
Well, probably.
Wouldn't there be typically some sort of code where you can't live in the garage?
I would think so, but
it's not. I mean, that's what I said. It's not heated and so on. I mean, typically, you're not able to live in a place that's not a dwelling unit.
Right. Now, I know people that have turned garages into living spaces,
but
they've added heat, air conditioning, windows,
right.
egress.
They've remodeled on the whole
exactly.
nine yards. That's a different ballgame.
Yep.
We're not talking about just throwing them out in the two-car garage with a cot and a mattress. Say, have fun.
Right. Which is probably what's going on here. But you don't.
But again, why do you punish everyone for one guy?
You don't.
Or one family, whatever it happens
you
to
don't.
Be.
You don't.
Again, this is the dumbest HOA move ever.
But then again, it is California.
And it is an HOA. And they have lots of dumb rules. Okay, we'll come right back. Grandma's handyman. Okay, wait a minute. How do we segue this? If you are looking to turn your garage into a dwelling, Dan, you probably wouldn't call Grandma's handyman because you might need a contractor, but maybe just have a few things in the garage you need taken care of.
Yeah, there's always something.
Maybe garage door needs fixed,
shelving
adjusted, shelving.
Up,
well, yeah, exactly. There you go. Grandma's handyman can help you with that. 1-year warranty on all their jobs. Senior discount of 10%, 303-693-3003. It's grandmashandyman.com. Tell them Rush to Reason sent you.
For the past 13 years, Grandma's Handyman Service has been helping Coloradan seniors do all the little jobs that need to get done. Grandma's Handyman has always been in the business of helping seniors just like you. We even still offer a 10% senior discount on labor off our already affordable prices. Don't leave your projects undone for another day. Grandma's Handyman is here to help you. Call to set up an appointment at 303-693-3003. That's 303-693-3003. 3003, or find us online at grandmashandyman.com.
All right, Bruce Simmons, he is our reverse mortgage specialist, and maybe, Dan, you want to move out of the HOA.
Maybe.
And you've got a lot of equity where you're at, and you still, you know, which, by the way, you can do. I believe you can take your home, sell it, go to the next home, reverse mortgage it, and away you go. That can be done.
Sweet.
So, Bruce Simmons can help you with everything I just said. He is our reverse mortgage specialist. 14-plus years of experience. He'll come to you anywhere in the Front Range. It's 303-467-7821. Bruce Simmons, reversemortgageradio.net, and tell him Rush to Reason sent you.
Bruce Simmons, KLZ's local reverse mortgage specialist, conducts business in person because you deserve to understand the process. Bruce gladly meets in your home, at a local restaurant, or wherever you prefer so that you may ask questions in a comfortable, relaxed atmosphere. Your reverse mortgage allows you to convert a portion of the value of your home into cash, potentially increasing your retirement resources by hundreds of thousands of dollars. You must interact face-to-face with your lender in order to fully grasp how the loan works. After dealing exclusively in reverse mortgages for nearly 15 years, Bruce knows that a phone conversation does not provide the same sense of security, and Bruce wants you to feel entirely at ease while you explore the details of your unique loan. Call 303-467-7821 to schedule a meeting with KLZ's local reverse mortgage specialist. You will make a decision with complete confidence because you will speak directly with Bruce.
It's time to leave your safe space. This is Rush to Reason on KLZ 560.
All right, Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. So in other awful news, Dan.
What's that? What could be more awful than that?
The Seattle new sugary drink tax. So Costco price labels perfectly expose the absurdity of Seattle's new sugary drink tax. To ring in the new year, Seattle implemented a new tax on its residents, the dreaded sugary drink tax. Now, we just know that it will hurt customers. This is an article out of theblaze.com, by the way. But how bad is it? Pricing labels at a Seattle Costco have garnered much attention because they show just how much soda and other sugary drinks now cost Seattle residents. A CBS News manager tweeted pictures showing the price increases of two drinks. In the first case, the price of a Dr. Pepper 36-can case nearly doubled. Mm-hmm. According to the picture, Costco sells a soda for $9.99, but with the added tax of $7.56, the soda now costs $17.55. In the second case, Costco sells a case of Gatorade for $15.99, but tax adds $10.34 to the price, which brings the total to $26.33. Despite the steep new prices, Costco was there to remind customers who live in Seattle city limits that the tax doesn't apply to its nearby locations outside of the city. What did Seattle do? The city council passed a $1.75 tax per ounce on sugary drinks. The tax affects sodas, energy drinks, sports drinks, juice, and other non-milk-based products. Non-milk-based drinks include many of those sold at Starbucks and other coffee shops, diet drinks, and those from small distributors are exempt from the tax. Distributors are required to pay the tax, however, the added cost has been directly passed on to consumers in most cases. The purpose of the tax, Dan, is that Seattle progressive leaders allege is to help thwart people from purchasing the drinks. Much of the tax will be used to fund programs designed to educate young people on making healthy choices. So, there we go again with the lefties trying to control your life.
And as you see, that Boulder's part of this. So Boulder has the sugary drink tax.
Uh-huh.
And have you tried to go in and buy a drink in Boulder?
Uh-uh.
It's interesting. So I buy my unsweetened tea in the bottles.
Uh-huh.
So my unsweetened tea is not subject to the tax, where the sweet tea right next to it is. And they lay it right on there. This is the price of your drink. This is how much the tax is if you have to pay for the sugary tax. So I've seen this before, and I've seen it in Boulder. It's crazy.
Another way the left wants to control and manipulate your life. Frankly, it's none of their stinking business if you want to have a Coke.
And did they really think that the distributors wouldn't pass this on to the consumer? Did they think?
No, I think they figured they would, and this is trying to keep people from drinking those.
Well,
that's their idea.
I wouldn't buy it there.
It's a sin tax, basically.
I mean, that's $7. That's a lot of gas money. If you buy two cases, that's $14. You can drive across.
Well, you go somewhere else and buy it.
Yeah, drive to the suburbs.
Just don't buy it there. Tax the bad things, Charlie said, like cigarettes and booze and
free rides on
gambling and things like that. What'd you say?
Free rides on the train. Tax them. Tax them. Tax them.
That's how we control things. Just tax them, Dan. So Dan.
What?
You're the historian. Were there ever times in the world where people thought the best way to eliminate something was to just add an extra tax? In other words, this isn't the first time this has ever happened,
no,
right?
This has been tried and tried and tried and tried.
Does it ever work?
No.
So why do we keep doing it?
I have no idea. You know, unless you can get the whole country to do it, then the black market comes in. Well, it's just like here in Colorado. Think about the marijuana. So, okay, so we're going to sell marijuana. We're going to tax it. Which part of that business is really booming? The black market, the underground black market marijuana sales.
We learned that last week.
Yeah. So, no, it doesn't. Yeah, granted, the state is getting some money because there are people that don't want to buy it through the black market.
And I suppose in this case, there'll be a little bit of tax revenue comes in when somebody really wants that can of soda and they just can't go anywhere else, and they've got to have their fix. They'll just spend the extra money, the $1.75 an ounce, and away they go.
Yeah, probably a lot of you millennials that don't understand what a dollar's worth put it on their dad's credit card anyway.
That's a good point. That's a lot of money.
But no, it's a ton of money.
$1.75
doubling the price
ounce
of that stuff.
But I mean, that can't. I don't know if the math is right on that. Is the math right? Is it $1.75? Yeah, $1.75. That can't be right.
Well,
it's got to be less than that, because if you're selling an entire case and add a tax of $7.56, that doesn't work out to the ounce. It's got to be like a 0.17.5 cent ounce tax or something. This article has to be wrong. Sorry, that can't be right. It can't be $1.75. It's got to be less than that. That does say, though, $1.75. 1.75 cents per ounce. Well, that would make a six-pack go up that much, not just... I mean, because a case has a ton of ounces.
Well, they're using that same rate in another article.
I see it. No, you're right. That's exactly what it says. A dollar? That's a lot, Dan. So a 16-ounce can, that can't be right. Because 16 ounces would cost you another $16 a can.
Well, that would be a $28 can of pop.
That can't be right. These articles have to be wrong. It cannot be $1.75. There's no way.
Hold on here. Carry the one.
carry the one. It can't. My math in my head is there's no way it's $1.75 an ounce. It's got to be like a can or something. There's no way it can be $1.75 an ounce.
Okay. Well, I was thinking maybe it was 17 and a half cents. Maybe they just had the decimal point in the wrong spot.
It's a 1 cent. Here, I got it. I'm reading the article wrong. It's 1.75 cents an ounce.
Okay, 1.75.
So on a 16-ounce deal, it would be 16 times point.
28 cents for a can.
There you go. So 28 cents a can.
You take that times 30. What was that, 30-pack?
Yeah, roughly, yeah.
So $8.40.
There you go. So that's where it comes out to. That makes more sense. Thank you. Still, it's a chunk of change.
Yeah, and they don't have that labeled right. It should be.
Well,
0.175
with a dollar sign next to it. Anyways, whatever. And it's correct once you read it right. It just doesn't, when you read it, it doesn't sound right.
1.75 cents.
It doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't sound right when you read it. But anyways, let's just say this: the left, just like I talked about yesterday with Obama, the left will do everything it possibly can to try to control your life. That's what they're there for. That's what they think it's their job to do. Save you from yourself, Dan. You shouldn't have sugary drinks, so we're just going to tax them.
Yeah, we can control your life better than you can.
Right. So
that is the mantra of the left.
So we will do it through taxation or any other means possible.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's how they do it.
That's exactly how they do it.
Yep.
In every aspect. I mean, when you look at the gas tax, look at just about anything, the cigarettes. Boy, that's the big one. They've been going after cigarettes like crazy with taxes. And quite frankly, it's not the tax that's stopping people from smoking. It's that people are realizing it's bad for them.
Sure. Right. That's right. That's right.
Yeah, 1.75 cents.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, we finally got it dialed in.
We figured it out.
We finally figured it out.
We're mathematicians.
Well, the problem was I was reading it and reading, you know, I was reading it out loud and looking at it at the same time, and that doesn't always work well when you're doing it that way. But we figured it out. We're sharp enough. We got it dialed in. It's not a big deal. We got it handled.
We got out the old calculator.
So basically, it's basically about a quarter on a can of pop, roughly. I'm wordle off a little, but it's about a quarter per can. Fairly close.
Yep.
It's not that far off. So if you live there, what would you do? I mean, I don't drink pop and stuff, so this doesn't have a huge effect upon me, although I will buy Gatorade from time to time.
Well, see, I just would weigh the difference. If it cost me more to go get it than to buy it there, I'd probably buy it there. But if it didn't, okay, let's say you were buying more than one case or something. So, because the kids, I mean, I don't want the kids not to have their root beer. They like their root beer. So if it's going to
cost... Frankly, if they want a few of those a week, who cares?
Yeah. And if it costs me more than the $7 to drive somewhere else and get it, time, gas, whatever,
what about people that have kids that are in athletes or, you know, athletics that are using Gatorade and things like that?
Yeah. Well, you'd want to...
The other question I've got doesn't talk about it in here is, what about the sugary drink packs? Like Gatorade comes powdered. Are they taxing that as well? Kool-Aid comes powdered.
That's a great question.
Are they taxing it? And it doesn't say
anything.
But in the
I'll tell you what, if I was going to go make a big run and there was a lot of beverage, sugary beverage stuff, I'd go somewhere else.
I'd go load up.
Yep, I'd go to the suburbs.
Well, I'd go load up, come back and sell it across back in my own town. If I lived in Seattle.
That'd be the black market, Jack.
Or Boulder. Why aren't we doing that in Boulder?
It'd be
Dan?
Illegal.
Why aren't we doing that in Boulder?
Who says they're not?
Who says it's illegal?
Well, that's called the black market.
Okay.
You're supposed, I mean, you're even supposed to charge sales tax at your garage sale. And when you don't, that's illegal.
Nobody does that.
I know nobody does it, but it's all illegal.
That's the dumbest thing. Who's going to... Okay, first of all, that stuff's all been taxed once anyways.
It doesn't matter.
Why do I need to tax it again? A pet peeve of mine. Talk about double taxation. The biggest offender of double taxation anywhere on the planet is when people buy cars. That car, by the time it's gone to the scrapyard, gets taxed so many stinking times, it's ridiculous.
Taxed to death.
Yep. Every time it's sold, there's new tax on it. The entire sales price had tax paid on it in the initial price. Why in the world does it keep getting sold over and over again and continue to get tax collected?
Because the governor's got to get his share.
That's right. They just keep cranking it out. Share. Yep. If you think we don't have double taxation, they think again. Oh, it's everywhere.
All the time. Well, the death tax. Your inheritance tax. That is robbery.
Yep.
That's theft.
Yeah, we should not be taxing things as many times as we do. Extreme Auto Repair, speaking of cars, is coming up next. They would love to respect you, your wallet, your car, anything that it takes to get your vehicle on the road, maintained, running well. They are there for you. It's in the heart of Parker. Extreme Auto Repair, 303-841-1071. When you see them, tell them Rush to Reason sent you.
At Extreme Auto Repair, Dennis Brewster and his team respect your wallet. Other shops will go ahead and replace your belts only to let you know afterward that your transmission is shot. Oops, that was a waste of money. Every time you go to Extreme Auto Repair, even for something as simple as an oil change, Dennis and his team complete a comprehensive check for no extra cost. Dennis doesn't want to scare you. He simply understands that you can't make an informed decision unless you know the condition of your vehicle. Otherwise, you run the risk of spending money on the wrong repairs. The longer you wait, the more expensive those problems will become. So Dennis and his team respect your wallet by letting you know early. Extreme Auto Repair helps you prioritize which repairs need immediate attention so you save money in the long term. Take it from John Rush and all of us at KLZ. Head to Parker today for Extreme Auto Repair, where you decide how to spend your money.
Stay up to date with Rush to Reason after the show on Twitter at Rush to Reason and on Facebook.com/Rush to Reason.
All right, Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. Mark and Black Forest joining us for this last segment of this first hour today. Mark, welcome.
Hi, guys.
How we doing?
Pretty good. Heard you talking about taxes. Made me think of, remember quite a few years ago there was a big tobacco settlement? Where I think all the states got a big pile of money. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
What happened to that money?
That's a great question. Where did that money go?
My dad died.
It went into education programs to keep you from smoking.
Okay. All of it?
You know, I don't know. It was supposed to go to settle some lawsuits, and it was supposed to go and, into programs.
You always
like
have to wonder, Mark brings up a great point, though. It's like, where does that money go? Because the states get it. Where does it go?
It evaporates. It just disappears.
Well, it doesn't seem like it goes to the victims, if you can call them victims. I mean, my dad smoked. He died of lung cancer. And, my family didn't get any of that money. I mean, maybe some of it should have gone to the victims. I don't know. It just doesn't seem right that it goes to the states. They spend a little bit on education programs, and then who knows what.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I do not like these state-led class action type suits where the states get these big, huge settlements, and then they just keep the money, throw it in the general coffer. They set it aside for some pet project of theirs. That just seems wrong to me.
I agree. And Mark, I was just trying to look up to try to determine where I could see where does that money actually go. Let's just say this. I'm not sure that's going to be an easy thing to trace out.
No, intentionally.
Yeah. Well, it might be coming up again with this opiate. I remember hearing something on the radio, I think your station, about the opiates. And they're kind of thinking of doing the same thing there. It's a class action suit against the drug companies. They're breaking some laws in the way they sold it because they knew better, according to how much was being sold in small towns, just a whole bunch. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I think the guy who was doing the analysis, he was thinking of the same thing. It's going to be another thing like another tobacco settlement. And again, I'm just thinking, okay, so let's say they get a big settlement. Where is that money going to go? Is it going to go to the victims or not?
You know, Mark, you bring up an interesting concept here. I just had this thought, right? So when you, first of all, you start off with the drug companies, you know, they get the opiates out there. And the government heavily regulates them because they don't want people abusing them because they're dangerous, right? Well, then the drug companies lobby, and then people that use the drugs lobby the government to loosen up the regulations, loosen this up so we can have easier access because nobody should be in pain, right? Nobody should be in pain. Well, then the government comes around and says, hey, look what these evil drug companies have done. They got everybody hooked on these opioids, right? Because the government allowed them.
Exactly.
And now the government's going to go sue those companies that made a bunch of money. Now the government's getting a bunch of money. What it really comes down to is you and I are paying a bunch of money so these other people can line their pockets.
Right.
Can't argue that one.
Suspect.
No, I'd like if somebody, Mark, you or anybody else, figures out exactly where that money goes. That would be nice to know. Because honestly, I would venture to guess, Mark, and I think you know what I'm going to say here. I'd venture to guess that is it going into the correct coffer? I highly doubt it.
Yeah,
and you'd have to wonder even is it going into the general fund and just getting spent on the rest of the nonsense that we have going on? Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah, well, probably.
Most likely is. I really.
You don't hear of any programs that are going to help the addicts.
True.
Get off of it. I don't know. Just talking out loud. Thanks, guys.
No, good stuff, Mark. Good comments. I'm glad you called and appreciate the phone call very much. Thanks for listening as well, Mark down in Black Forest. Appreciate that. No, Dan, I mean, anytime we've got these, what do you call them? Collection accounts? Is that the best way to say that? So these funds, they come out. You know, whether it be, I don't know. I mean, we got them for everything. I mean, you've got them for the cigarette tax is probably the big one, but we've got these things for everything. There's these funds for everything. I mean, for example, Volkswagen getting hit with billions of dollars of fines. Where does that go?
Well, that all went to save the planet.
Yeah, sure.
From global warming.
Sure, it did. I mean, each state's even supposed to get a certain amount of that money.
And what are they going to do with it?
I have no... And I'd like
Teach
to know, where does that money actually go?
Not to buy Volkswagens? I mean, what do you do with it?
No, it has to do with... I don't know. It's environmental crap. I don't know where it goes.
Because it is environmental crap.
I'm not sure Volkswagen knows.
Yeah, but it's CRAP is what it is. It's crap.
Volkswagen's just writing the check.
Right. Volkswagen's writing the check. Settle with the government.
I'm not sure anybody knows exactly where the money ends up, and is it actually going to do what they wanted it to do in the first place? And I'm guessing that the answer is probably going to be no.
Collectively doing less damage than one lightning bolt.
Yeah. That's what those vehicles were doing. Been down. We studied that.
And that cost them how much?
Oh, like $6 billion, I think it's going to be when it's all said
and
done.
That's a ton of money.
$6 billion with a B.
That's a ton of money.
It's a lot of money.
Now, if we could just tax lightning bolts.
Oh, man. Wouldn't we be set then? God, pay up. And that's really what we're asking. It's dumb. The whole thing is dumb. All right. What are we doing next hour? We got a lot going on. Any ideas? What do we got?
I have no idea.
I look at it. Oh, Fran Lewis, an author, is going to join us. And Gary Byrne's going to join us. He's also a Secret Service agent, so he's going to join us as well. So we got a lot going on this next hour. Please don't go anywhere. Another full 2 hours coming your way. John Rush, Dan Muir, Charlie Grimes, our engineer. And don't forget, we will be live Friday and Saturday out at the Sportsman's Expo, out at the convention center. So those of you that are out listening, please stop by and say hi. We'd appreciate it on those 2 days. Drive Radio will be there Saturday, and we'll be there on Friday. With that, we'll be out of here. If you're listening and it's close to 7 o'clock, have a fantastic evening. Otherwise, we'll be back. Hour 2, Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560.